You're listening to the Study Legal English podcast, the world's first legal English podcast, helping lawyers and law students become fluent in legal English. Hello and welcome to episode 36 of the Study Legal English podcast. I am your host, Louise, and today's episode is about EU law. In case you missed them, the past few episodes have all been about the EU, including its origins and institutions, and these episodes all form part of the English Legal System Module 2 Sources of Law course, which you can find at www.studylegalenglish.com. And before we get started, I have a question for you. What do you think about Brexit? This is related to the topic that we'll be covering in the next episode, so send in your thoughts to info@studylegalenglish.com. So let's get started. In episode 35 of the podcast, we learnt about why the EU, as we know it today, was set up. The treaty establishing the European Economic Community talked about maintaining economic and social progress and eliminating barriers which divide Europe. In order to achieve these goals, of course, laws are necessary. And just as we saw in episode 24 of the podcast about how the UK has primary and secondary sources of law, so does the EU. In the UK, primary sources of law include primary legislation, such as Acts of Parliament. It also includes case law, law which is made by the courts, whereas secondary sources of law include secondary legislation, that is, legislation which is made by a delegated authority, such as statutory instruments and bylaws. If we're talking about the EU, treaties are the only source of primary law. Secondary sources include regulations, directives, recommendations, opinions, and decisions. We also have case law, decisions which are issued by the ECJ. When we refer to this body of law as a whole, we call it acquis communautaire, which means that which has been acquired and of the community. So let's take a closer look. First, let's consider treaties. These are the only primary source of EU law, and sometimes they are considered the EU's de facto constitution. And this means that although they may not be officially recognised as a constitution, in reality, they kind of do make up a constitution. So, what are the EU treaties? Well, the treaties are binding agreements which set out the EU's general objectives. They set out a broad framework and establish key rules about how decisions can be made and the relationships between the EU and the member states. EU treaties are made and can be subsequently amended by EU member states negotiating and agreeing upon treaty provisions and then ratifying them. Ratification generally refers to the official process which is needed to make a signed treaty legally binding upon the state. This process varies from country to country. For example, in some countries a referendum is needed, and in some countries, legislation must be passed, for example, an Act of Parliament, and so ratification can take some time. Treaties are broad and general and do not go into strict and well-defined details. Instead, this is the role of secondary legislation. However, as you probably already know, treaties are incredibly important. Why? Because it is from these agreements that the EU gains its legitimacy, and everything it does, including all the subsequent legislation, policies, and court decisions it makes, should be in accordance with what is set out in the treaties. For example, the EU can only pass laws in areas where its member states have given it permission to do so through the treaties. Decisions or acts which go beyond the power derived from the treaties could be considered ultra vires, meaning beyond the power, or in other words, invalid and not applicable. The two main founding treaties of the EU are the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union, 1957, and the Treaty on the European Union, 1992. A number of subsequent amending treaties have changed the provisions of these founding treaties. These include the Single European Act, 1986, the Treaty of Amsterdam, 1999, the Treaty of Nice, 2003, and the Treaty of Lisbon in 2009. And if you're interested in finding more about those, I suggest you listen to episode 34, which was about the origins of the European Union. As well as these treaties, there are some other treaties called accession treaties, which are specifically related to how countries join the EU. So let's move now to secondary sources of EU law. Article 288 of the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union outlines five types of legal acts that EU institutions may take in order to achieve the objectives set out in the treaties. These acts may be legally binding, such as regulations, directives, and decisions, and also non-binding, such as recommendations and opinions. Let's take a look at regulations. So regulations are a secondary source of EU law. They give more detail than the treaties, but are still quite general in nature. They are defined under Article 288 of the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union as having general application, binding in its entirety, and directly applicable in all member states. This means that once they are enacted and enter into force, they automatically bind and uniformly apply to all EU member states. An important point is that they do not need to be transposed into national law. This means that a member state does not need to pass a national act of parliament for this law to be applicable in that member state. Moreover, if a national law is actually incompatible with the provisions of this regulation, the regulation takes precedence, as regulations supersede incompatible national laws. And so you can see that member states' laws can be radically changed by joining the European Union. Let's move on to directives. Directives are the most detailed and specific of EU laws. Article 288 of the Treaty on the Functioning of the European Union, again, states that a directive is binding as to the result to be achieved upon each member state to which it is addressed, but leaving to the national authorities the choice of form and methods. What does that mean? Well, this means that a directive sets out objectives that member states must achieve, but it leaves the way in which they achieve this to the member states' own discretion. Directives have led to some really groundbreaking pieces of legislation. For example, in the UK, the Equal Pay Act 1970 and the Sex Discrimination Act 1975 are two examples of national laws which were made in order to achieve objectives laid down in the European directives. Normally, a directive will permit a certain amount of time to allow member states to transpose the provisions into national law, and this is normally around 2 years. If the member state fails to do so, the Commission may initiate infringement proceedings, and the directive will have vertical direct effect. We'll be talking a little bit about that later on. Let's move on to decisions, which are quite limited in their application. Decisions are addressed directly to member states or to specified individuals such as businesses, and they are only legally binding on those to whom they are addressed. However, they are binding automatically and in their entirety, and they do not require transposition. They don't require any further measures for them to be binding. Next, we have two main non-binding legal acts, known as recommendations and opinions. Recommendations and opinions are a way for EU institutions to make their views known about a particular topic, however, they are not legally binding. But national courts must take these recommendations into consideration when interpreting national law. And this is known as soft law, and this was established by the case of Grimaldi in 1989. And what about case law? Well, another source of European law is case law, and the European Court of Justice only has jurisdiction on European matters. Its decisions are binding on each member state. However, it is up to the national court to issue a judgment in line with the ECJ decision. Let's move now to discuss the applicability and effect of EU law. When we're talking about EU law, we talk of it having either direct applicability or direct effect. And it's very important to know that these terms are exclusive and with distinct meanings. If a source of law has direct applicability, it means that the law automatically becomes part of the national law of the member state, and there is no need for further measures such as transposition. We can say that direct applicability is concerned with the incorporation of EU law into national law. We can contrast this with direct effect, which instead of being concerned with the way of incorporation of the law, it is concerned with who can enforce and rely on the law. If a source of law has direct effect, it means that it creates and protects individual rights, which can be enforced in the Court of Justice of the European Union and additionally in the national courts. There are also two types of direct effect, vertical and horizontal. When the law has vertical effect, it means that the rights of individuals can be enforced against the state, such as national governments or public bodies. When the law has horizontal effect, the rights of individuals can be enforced against other individuals and organisations or private bodies. So, incredibly simple. I'm sure you're following me perfectly. Just remember that direct applicability is concerned with incorporation of EU law and direct effect is concerned with enforceability. So now let's consider what has direct applicability and what has direct effect. Firstly, let's take a look at treaties. Do you think they are directly applicable? Yes, treaty articles are directly applicable, providing that the state has signed up to the treaty and ratified the treaty, no further measures are necessary to make sure that the member state complies with the treaty provisions. What about direct effect? Who can enforce the rights created in a treaty? Well, provided that the treaty provisions fulfil the criteria that the ECJ set in the case of Van Gend of being sufficiently clear and precise, unconditional, and requiring no further legislation, then the treaty articles will have both vertical and horizontal direct effect. And this means that the treaty articles can be enforced by individuals against the state or other individuals. Next up, we have regulations. What do you think? Can you remember what I said about regulations? Well, regulations are directly applicable. They apply automatically. They are also directly effective, both vertically and horizontally, provided that the Van Gend criteria is met. Next up, we have directives. Can you remember whether directives need member states to implement them? Well, they do. This means that directives are not directly applicable, as they require implementation by member states. But what about direct effect? Well, directives can be directly effective, meaning that they can create rights for individuals if they are sufficiently clear, precise, and unconditional, as established in the case of Van Dunne in 1974. But only if the implementation deadline has passed, according to the case of Publico Ministero against Ratti in 1978. However, it is important to note that although directives can have vertical direct effect, meaning that they can be relied on by individuals against the state, they cannot have horizontal effect, meaning that they cannot be relied upon by an individual against another individual. This was established by the case of Marshall in 1986. However, there may be some hope for individuals who have suffered some kind of loss because the member state has failed to implement the directive correctly or has simply failed to implement the directive and the implementation deadline has passed. And that is through indirect effect. This refers to the process where national law must be interpreted by national courts in accordance with the relevant EU law. So, therefore, in a case between two individuals, where a directive has not been implemented or has been implemented incorrectly, an individual, in a sense, can rely on the directive's provisions, as the national court must interpret the national law in line with EU law, in this case, in line with the provisions of the directive, as established in von Colson in 1984 and Adenola against E-Log. Another option is that there may be compensation available for an individual who would like to enforce their rights against other individuals but can't. Where a member state has failed to implement a directive within the specified time or has implemented it incorrectly, causing a loss to the individual, the individual can sue the state for damages, otherwise known as Frankovic damages, as established by the Frankovic case in 1992. And what about the other types of sources of law we mentioned? Recommendations and opinions are, of course, not directly applicable or directly effective, as they are only soft law. They aren't legally binding. Decisions, on the other hand, are directly applicable and also vertically directly effective, but limited to those who they are addressed to. Decisions of the ECJ are not directly applicable, as it is down to the National Court to issue a judgment in line with the ECJ's decision, but they are capable of having direct effect, meaning that an individual can rely on the decision of the ECJ to protect his or her rights. So let's do a quick recap. Aside from treaties being the primary source of law in the EU, there are sources of secondary law, directives, regulations, recommendations, opinions, and decisions. Of course, as well as this, we have case law. The sources of law can have either direct applicability, meaning that they do not require the member state to transpose the law into their national law in order for it to take effect. They can also have direct effect, which means that they can create rights for individuals which can be enforced vertically against the state or horizontally against other individuals. Treaty articles and regulations can be enforced against individuals, and treaty articles, regulations, and directives can all be used against the state. So, that's quite a lot to take in. And it brings us to the end of today's episode, where we've looked at the laws of the European Union. If you're a Podcast Pro member, head over to studylegalenglish.com/episode36 for your further resources. And I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget about my question from today. What are your thoughts about Brexit? Send an email to info@studylegalenglish.com. And of course, you can get in touch on Facebook and Twitter. So thank you for listening and see you next time.